I was standing in the ocean at Avila Beach just a few days ago. I was on my crutches, like most people would be in the water on the crutches. I definitely got some questions about it. It was odd, I'm sure. But I was thinking about how quickly the time has elapsed from our arrival a week ago, just a week ago, last Friday. In just a few hours, we'll all be once again separating and traveling back to our respective homes. In part, this will be nice, as Mr. Burke also observed yesterday, getting back to the things that we're more familiar with, and maybe we have pets that we miss and that are missing us. But we'll also be back into the world of our jobs and our lives, and once again dealing with the problems of the world that we face each and every day in the world. And as we know, the hostility that may often be directed at us for what we do here, what we're observing, and the meaning of it, perhaps that too. As we leave, though, we have to remember what we know to be the truth. This path that we are on, and I use the word path very deliberately, is one that requires an invitation. And I did not always understand this. But if I make a list of all the things I don't understand and didn't understand and mistakes I've made, it would stretch back to my hometown in New York. As we know, we cannot come to know Jesus Christ without the Father first drawing us. That is very clear. We all understand that. As I said, that was never that clear to me. But think of all the people that you know who maybe talk at work and then they talk about church hopping for various reasons. They're trying to find the fit, find a meaning for them. Being called by God the Father may not be in the mix for them. Perhaps they look for the type of the music or the coffee that might be served, or even the amount of work they might have to do if they join that group. But for us, it's different. As we go back into the world, we must know that we are not alone. If we've been called by the Father, and if we are sincerely trying to live true to his commandments, as he requires, he will not leave us. We've heard that form of that message all week long. We have, and hopefully it's made an impact. God not only provides a means of escape for us from sin, he marks a trail for us to follow. When I first got to Colorado and Shelley and I would hike, I was fascinated by the concept and the location of cairns. This is where it's going to start getting into what this means. A cairn is a man-made pile of stones. And if you've hiked, you've seen them at an intersection most likely. And I never knew what this thing was. It really fascinated me how much care. I thought someone was just making art. That was a sculpture each and every time. The word cairn come, and I hope I'm saying it correctly, maybe Mr. Harris and I don't have it right, but comes from the Scottish and Gaelic word cairn, very similarly pronounced. They've been used for a broad variety of purposes from ancient times to the present. In modern times, cairns are often erected as landmarks, wayfinding in the architectural sense these days. However, since early days, they've also been built and used as burial monuments, perhaps, or for defense and for hunting and for codes to other members of a tribe in terms of where they should be going for ceremonial purposes, and sometimes relating to astronomy. I think you probably know that, and sometimes relating to a cache of something that's buried underground. But imagine the spiritual cairns as the Israelites of old were fleeing the Pharaoh and his armies. Their backs were against the mountains on one side and the sea on the other, and God had a purpose in that. And in Exodus 12 and in verse 37, we read, and if you want to turn there with me, so again, Exodus 12 and verse 37, there's an awful lot I'm just going to read a couple of points from the scripture here, but there's an awful lot more that you can read to really understand the depth of what was going on. But I will read in verse 37, "Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, and there were about 600,000 men on foot beside women on foot as well as children." Now, the specific route of the Exodus may not be absolutely clear to us in modern times, whether Moses was led by God along a southern route skirting the edge of the Sinai or took a slightly different turn. The point was God commanded the pathway. God commanded Moses to camp by the sea near, and hopefully I'm getting this correct, pronouncing this correctly, Pi Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. And there was a point to this. God wanted his people to have their backs to the mountains and to see the sea in front of them and to understand that there were no choices. And the message was also to the Egyptians that were pursuing the Israelites. And they had obviously had their hearts hardened by Pharaoh, by God, and they were strong in their pursuit. They were not going to turn back. So God was setting the stage with a spiritual cairn for the people so the people would understand that in order to escape what was ahead of them, they had to rely on God. And we know what God said to Moses. And I'm not going to read the scripture, but God was very clear that Moses had a job to do. The people could not have survived the crossing without God's guidance to cross the sea where he intended. And if you will, it was God's cairn along the way. God could have made the journey much quicker, but he had a point that he was making to his people. They needed to rely on him, and they needed to see his majesty. And if you have any doubts of this, and certainly we in the room do not, there exist today ancient remnants of the cairns that show the route in the Red Sea. Oceanographers and archaeologists have found the shapes of the Egyptian chariots and the wheels on the floor of the Red Sea, all along the floor from one shore to the other shore. And God could have allowed the Egyptians to return, but again, he was making a point as to who was God in the situation. It was clearly he was in command. Now, along the journey, God also commanded Moses that the people should observe the Passover despite the journey. So God, once again, was not making this journey an easy, quick fleeing like one might expect today if people were fleeing danger. God commanded that they would observe Sabbath and the Passover. He was clear that this was how, he was also clear how to deal with exigencies such as death along the journey. Again, no shortcuts. With so many people on the journey, grumbling was not uncommon, and that's a human nature condition. Moses and Aaron had a job to do, but they had God. God also made it clear to Moses, such as the critical details as to when the people should travel and when they should remain encamped. Again, God was providing a very clear guidance, very clear cairn, if you will, along the way. And in Numbers 9, and in verses 15 through 23, we can take note of the following cairns in the form of the time and the days when the Israelites should journey. Ms. Harris, is the water on the right? Okay, thank you. I, too, am getting a bit of the cotton mouth. Now, again, in Numbers 9, in verses 15 through 23, there's an awful lot of meat here. And I want to focus really on verse 17. I think that's where I can make the point most effectively. So reading in verse 17 together, "Whenever the cloud was taken up from above the tabernacle after the children of Israel would journey, and in the place where the cloud settled, there the children of Israel would pitch their tents. At the command of the Lord, the children of Israel would journey, and at the command of the Lord, they would camp. As long as the cloud stayed above the tabernacle, they remained encamped. So God was very clear. He could have allowed the people to just keep moving if that was his course. But again, he had points to make, and he was making it through this journey. And he was setting the stage for what would come later. Now, I would encourage you to read the rest of that section all the way through to verse 23 yourself. I don't want to take the time this morning to do that. But the point was clear that God was providing the guidance that the people needed to follow. God the Father also provided a very significant cairn for Jesus Christ. And let's turn together to Luke 1 and in verse 76. This is referring to John the Baptist. And as we read, "And you, my child, will be called a prophet of the Most High, for you will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him." So again, God was creating a pathway for Jesus Christ and beginning the journey for Jesus Christ to arrive and to do his work by providing John the Baptist with a message. And if we want to read a very similar verse in Matthew 3, you don't necessarily need to turn there. Again, this refers to John the Baptist and the work that he would do. "This is he who was spoken of through the prophet Isaiah, a voice of one calling in the desert, 'Prepare the way for the Lord, make straight paths for him.'" Again, God was setting the stage and setting the pathway that Jesus would be following for our sake, for our benefit. Each of us has something that makes us unique. Not only in God's eyes, we know that to be true, but also important to us here together. And the work that we do. We don't need to turn to Romans 12, but verses 4 through 8, but I just want to mention that you can make note of it. This is the concept that many of us together form the whole of the church, as described, and the different skills that members may contribute. This is very important because we all have different skills. We've heard some beautiful music, special music. We've heard beautiful voices, beautiful instruments. We've heard wonderful, inspiring sermons and sermonettes. These are all forms of what the talents that God has imbued his people with. And coming together, we form the church that God has created. The cairns that God the Father and his Son, Jesus Christ, sets for us include the Sabbath and the holy days. Again, spots along the pathway that we follow. And if we are following, we're not likely to lose our way. I'm sure we can all recall remarking how quickly the time flies from the spring holy days. And I can recall sitting, visiting after services when we'd start talking about feast preparations just after the spring holy days. And here we are. And here we are wrapping up a fabulous festival, Feast of Tabernacles. But how quickly the time flew, through Pentecost, onto trumpets, atonement, and then finally to the Feast of Tabernacles. These are our stepping stones. These are our cairns along the pathway to salvation. Through the currents of this world, they keep us close to one another. Obviously, they bring us together physically, emotionally, and spiritually, but closer still to God, and that is the point. And God provides options for us. And these are the options from a sinful life to one where we can follow his cairns and his pathway that he establishes. Some cairns are like the specific stone stacks that I described early on that I would be puzzled about until Shelley explained that, no, they're there so you can go that way instead of going the wrong way and finding a mountain lion, perhaps. And some are spiritual guidance to get us to the end, to be with God and Jesus Christ during his reign. Now, as you begin to head back, as I mentioned earlier, into the world, I think all of us will undoubtedly feel a bit of a letdown. I think this is normal. It's part of what we experience. But instead of this, instead of that feeling, which, and I know it's hard to change feelings, but think about just rejoicing in the knowledge and the truth that we are all connected and that we truly do have these stepping stones along the way that are there for us and will bring us back together until Jesus returns. And that is a wonderful thing. And so before long, we'll be discussing the spring holidays together and making plans and the feast once again. So we will have our time and our stones along the pathway, and we will be able to plan for time together until the return of Jesus Christ. So I say, smile, rejoice, and let that light of yours shine.